Good evening, everyone.
Good evening.
And it is 7 o'clock. And tonight we are marching our way through an investigation of the book Invocation of Presence by E.J. Gold. It's staggering in its simplicity because it takes us right to the pragmatic impossibility, or wait, near impossibility of transformation. And we've got some very great information to cover. We're on chapter 2, but it's a very short chapter, Evan, yet it's pithy.
Certainly.
Did I? Wait, no, we're on chapter 3.
Chapter 3.
We made it to chapter 3, I'm sorry, and oddly enough, it's called To Be Alive.
Yeah, right.
So the nature of the chapter is that we're going to read a good portion of it, and then I'm going to have side comments that we're going to work with that are very, very interesting. And so let's just begin right away. Do you want to get us started, Ivan, and just read the first two or three paragraphs there, please?
Okay.
Actually,
page 11.
Read the first two paragraphs, and then Judy, you read 3, and Sean, 4, okay?
But do you mean these very short?
Do you have your books, you guys?
Yes, I do.
Yeah,
Ivan will cue you.
Chapter 3, To Be Alive. What invocation could we use for the invocation of presence, G asked. I am here, someone volunteered.
Judy?
But this is an incomplete formulation, which therefore has an opposite invocation. G replied, what would it be?
Go ahead. Keep going.
There I go, someone humorously suggested. When the laughter died down, G said, very close, closer than you think.
And Sean, by accident, you read the next paragraph, but it's perfect for you. Go ahead.
Great. This led to an explanation of another use of the stop. Between one exhalation and the next inhalation is a pause, a moment of temporary death, a taste of breathlessness, during which we could, if we use this moment of breathlessness as a remembering factor, practice invoking our presence in preparation for that moment when our breath really will come to a complete stop.
So when I read through this, what it made me think about is some work I did years and years ago with the Zen Koan. And I was, for a short period of time, working with a Buddhist master, and we got into some of this stuff. So the Zen Koan is these are statements that are the logic can't answer. There's unusual statements, and you know, we remember some of the ones that they're famous, you know, what is the sound of one hand clapping? But we don't realize that when that koan is given to the student, the master asks the student, says, clap. And so you clap with your two hands, and then he says, now clap with one hand. Now, what that does is it puts the student in an interactive mode. Their body has become engaged in that too, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we engage our body in such a way that this begins the process of a deeper type of understanding with this process of what is the koan. And we were talking earlier at dinner about a particular one that we've heard many times and is in the literature of koan, where there are these two monks, a senior monk who's been with the monastery for 25 years, and a more junior monk a mere 10 years, okay? And they had to go into town to do something. They're walking back to the monastery, and there on the curbside is this beautiful young lady, a geisha in, you know, wonderful kimono, but she can't cross because there's a mud puddle there. And she's perplexed. The senior monk, without missing a beat, walks up, picks her up, takes her across the mud puddle and sets her down, and on they go. The junior monk, of only 10 years of practice, was speechless. And, you know, they went on hours and hours later, he says to the senior monk, how could you do that? You know, we don't touch women. This is our order. And the senior monk says, oh, I put her down hours ago. And you? So how do we put ourselves in a place where our invocation of presence not only is exhibited, but it's tested? How do we test ourselves, put ourselves in a situation where the action of invocation of presence is tested? The first few chapters and material that we've worked on show us how to do it, and Sean and a few others are explaining that they are doing it and how they're doing it in the world. And let's look at the next paragraph then, and let's just, this is a very interesting, and it emphasizes what I'm trying to say. Ivan, do you want to take us through that one?
Okay. The invocation of presence, especially under serious stress, G continued, is an acquired art which must be developed and improved every day, and not just under easy circumstances, or it will all be just hark a cannon until the day the cannon goes off, when we hear a hysterical scream, Jesus Christ, what was that?
Greetings, Harry. So the point is this. Every one of us today went through a series of exercises. I was in a business meeting at 1:30 today with the city manager of Nevada City, two other business people, and the chief of police. Kind of a high-stress situation. The point is that when I was hit with the stress, what did I do with it? Okay? Did I shout out, you know, did I shout out, Jesus Christ, what was that? So, can you get yourself in a position where your reaction, I'm going to now cross that word out and say the word, your response to a stressful situation is to go into a sense of presence. Does that make sense to you?
Absolutely.
So tell me how that works then. Anybody?
Well, it's an acquired art which must be developed and improved every day, so that when that crack happens, we're not jolted into a reaction. We're rather responding in a way that we've accustomed ourselves by learning how to respond rather than waiting for the reaction to come at the end of it. What I get out of it.
Where are you living now, Sean?
I still live in Nanville, New Jersey.
So do you ever ride the bus?
I haven't done it in a long time. I got a car, and it's I've ridden the bus many, many times around here, but not in a long time.
Not in a while, but you have your car, so you go in, you get in your car, and now you're going to a job or something, right?
Oh, yeah.
And you get into traffic. And then that guy cuts you off. What do you do? Right?
Right.
What do you do?
Depending upon, I usually try and smile or wave at them, but depending upon my state, if I'm in a particularly internal mood and I'm not too happy that I have to be late for work that day, then I'm going to snap. I'm going to react. I'm not going to be responsive that we'll all have to drive in traffic. I'm going to react back.
So if we see ourselves, let's say that second thing occurs and we see ourselves react, what I'm hoping is that we'll gradually get to a place where we're going to find how unusual it is. How unusual it is that my face is crunched up into anger, my muscles are tense, my voice is, how unusual that is. And that puts you in the beginnings of the possibility of invoking your presence. When this art becomes more and more important to us, I don't want us to guilt trip about this, but when it becomes more important to us, you're going to seek ways and means to put yourself in a position where there is that stress, right? You're going to put yourself, that reminds me of having soup with you at a little restaurant in New York 1,000 years ago, and we were actually talking about a similar topic at the time. I was visiting with Evan Lurie doing some
work. What a memory.
Yeah. And so, like, you're checking out at the food store and you have a huge order, you know, are you in tension, you know, because of what's happening, or is that helping you get to the sense of presence? Okay? So we need to find these ways and means. So I told this story before, but this was Thich Thien Nhat, different than the other Thich. This is a different Vietnamese monk that I worked with in L.A. years and years and years ago that EJ was friends with. Lovely man. And he told a story. He said that in this one monastery in Japan, Rinzai Zen, where they used the koan, you were given a koan. You were given a koan to study, and in your koan, you then have to solve the koan. The only way to solve it is to come to a different level of being. You really had to, your being had to be different. It wasn't a mental thing. You couldn't do it. And so part of the process is every single morning, you had to get up, get in line, and go to the dojo where the master was sitting there, and you had to give the answer to your koan. Okay? Even if you got it the day before, you knew you didn't have it. And then you'd sit down before him, you'd prostrate, and you'd begin giving your answer, and as soon as you were off, he'd ring the bell, and you'd have to leave. Some people would walk in, as they stepped in, he'd ring the bell. And Thich Thien Nhat was talking, just laughing his ass off when he was telling me this. And so in the monasteries there, of course, they would have prayer, they had meditation, but then they'd have to go work in the field, right? And so you'd be working away and whoever is supervising, you're pushing you, you're not working hard enough, and you never knew when the master would come up and say, what's the answer to your koan? So it's something that you would carry with you all the time. And we have to develop that sense of the red hot iron ball in our stomach. And then when it becomes a natural response to us as we go through life, then we have something. Then you have something that you can begin to really stand upon. So remember this thing, this idea of what is your response to the cannon going off? Mm-hmm. You know? What's your response? Maybe your response is going to be to invoke your presence. Maybe that's going to be your response. Sometimes it will be. Okay.
David, don't we build a kind of inertia by just trying to do this often impossible task over time, such that when something comes along like a letter from the IRS or something else, where somebody calls you a name or cuts you off in traffic, when you actually have maybe a little 5-second window there in which you can choose to respond differently, and that one makes smoke come out of your ears and creates friction inside, but you do have a moment in which you have a choice, whereas beforehand, it just seems to overtake you and you're already done in before it's begun. Does that make sense?
Yeah, because we're don't forget what we've talked about is the balance between the machine and the essential self, right? When we live in the world, mostly we're the machine. It's like the machine is 99% of us and we're 1%. The essence is always there. And if we start to work on it gradually, it starts to come more evident, and then it becomes balanced. And ever so gradually, the state of the essential self becomes a little more prominent. So when we were surprised when the machine reacts rather than the essential self coming forth as a response.
Yes.
Yes.
Well,
David?
Yes, Judy.
This kind of a practice is key in the development of impartiality. And, you know, that's very intimately tied to this. What I've noticed in working on this, there are still certain situations where I lose it. However, in business, I don't lose it at all anymore. I just stop. It's a stop exercise. I use that negative force. And, I mean, it's even surprising to me, like, oh, so I'm going to lose this $20,000 deal. Okay. You know, it's really a completely different experience. So it's there are certain areas of one's life where it's much harder to do that. I acknowledge that. So what worked for me is start somewhere.
Start somewhere.
Uh-huh.
Start somewhere. Look at the simplicity of that. Just where can you start? Somewhere, right? But I like what Judy said, and I'd like to explore just a second, is to use the negative force. It's just a force. It's just energy, right? And you use that to be a trigger for birthing the presence that you know is there. And I get caught, like Sean does sometimes, in the same reaction when some SOB comes behind me and these giant trucks, you know, comes right up to the back end, you know, and I go, ugh, you know, I want to flip the guy off and da-da-da-da-da, and that's churning in me. And then it goes, wow, that's strange. Look at that. So gradually the habit starts to, like Judy is saying, that habit starts to become second nature. And it is a sense of impartiality. You just watch it and you go, well, that's interesting. I did lose that $20,000 deal. Wow. Whoa. Okay.
That sounds like a pretty advanced one to me.
Well, you know, the interesting thing is when it comes to, like, dealing with the negative manifestations of other people, I'll give you an example. I think this one is probably better than that one. But my brother loves to put me down, loves to criticize me, find everything wrong with me, especially in front of other people. Okay, he has this need to pump himself up or something like that. Anyway, whatever, this is a long history with him of sibling rivalry. So finally, I got to a point where I just decided I am not going to respond no matter what he says. So I went to Sarasota to get away from the hurricane. I was there for 3 days, and I brought a friend. Well, he...
One quick question, Judy.
Yeah.
Did you survive?
I survived.
Excellent.
And he really went at it like crazy. You know, it was like the Eckhart Tolle, the pain body. He wasn't getting a reaction from me anymore. So he did it more and more and more. And you know what happened? Well, first of all, some of it, you know, stung. I mean, I'm not saying it didn't sting, but I used it, and it became funny. and I became the observer watching him do this in totally insane mechanical automatic stuff, and I felt compassion. You know, this is what you have to do to your sister.
There you go.
And I wasn't upset anymore. It was like it took me years to work through that. However, there is hope. That's what we have to understand. There is hope.
When you have a relationship like that, and I told a story a few weeks ago about somebody that has a relationship like that with somebody, and you get to the place where you're in objectivity observing, you will begin to feel the compassion. When you feel the compassion, that's a sign, it's a trigger that says where you're at. That's the proper stance to be at. Go ahead, Dan.
Rocky says, presence disconnects me from the machine.
That's exactly right. The presence disconnects us from the slavery to the machine. The machine, as we talked about last week, is identified with Maya. It's not Maya that's the problem. It's identification with Maya. And our identification with the machine, machine ego, anyways, very interesting. Yeah. Go ahead.
Videra says, I use the invocation of presence when I notice negative habits to try to use it for a higher purpose, which is very liberating.
Say that again. Read that again.
I use the invocation of presence when I notice negative habits to try to use it for a higher purpose, which is very liberating.
So the negative habit, same energy of the negative habit is what we use for the higher purpose. Because we have a transport mechanism. The transport mechanism is invocation of presence. Now, this talk we're having right here, nobody's talking about stuff like this right now. It is very, very subtle that we're talking about. The fact that even recognizing negative manifestation is incredible, and then to use them the way that Videra and Judy are telling us, my God, that's really something. Go ahead.
And Antimatter says, nice outline of the stages from impartial observation to compassion.
Yeah. This is a second level of work that we'll get to in ourselves, but the foundation. And this is what this book is about. It's standing upon solid ground. We create the solid ground, and once we have the solid ground, many things are possible to us. And when we've been talking about the whole idea of, like we did that whole bow and arrow exercise, don't lose yourself. When you get identified outside, we lose ourselves. We literally lose ourselves. My gosh, we lose ourselves, so retain yourself because you got work to do. You got work to do with it, okay? Yeah. And so we do that work together, and you hold on to yourself because you can, you're able, and then as we develop it, this strange thing can occur. And that's when you see like Judy and her brother, she saw the mechanicality. And I don't know the fellow, but I tell you, he's locked in that. And just below the surface is an enormous amount of pain that he has. And he's trying to offload that pain to Judy. She's just saying, I'm not buying it anymore. You know?
Right. And also, David, not to have the need to, like, totally wipe him out like my brother's terrible, and understand that it's an aspect of him that he doesn't have control over. And, you know, there are a lot of wonderful things I love about my brother, but there's stuff that he does that is like, to me, what it really was I was watching a bunch of insane eyes. That's what I was watching. I was watching total pathological insanity. That's what it looked like to me.
Like this crazy. This is another canvas upon which we can practice is our workmates, people we live next to, we live with, they have manifestations that are their own that for us are negative manifestations. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
For us, they're negative manifestations. So begin, attempt. Begin with, start, what did she say? Start somewhere?
Start with something. Just pick something. Well, start with something.
From
David, you
could
start getting married. Is that what you mean? Open heart.
Start somewhere. That was it. Start somewhere. Start somewhere. And so if you are going to... So instead of walking in the door preparing for reaction, we should be used to, that's mostly how we go about the world, whether you're
mm-hmm.
going into the store or whatever. Start by opening the door of invocation or presence and walking through the door with that in your pocket. How about that? Then you look around you.
That's a good point, David. In other words, it's kind of a hint you're giving here. In other
yep.
words, all of us know that there are certain places that we're going to be reactivated. So that's a good place to start because it's not going to be a surprise. We know we're going to have stuff coming at us. So we can prepare in advance. For situations that we can't prepare in advance, well, we're probably still in the baby state with regard to that. But there's lots of places we can prepare in advance.
There's lots of things we can prepare in advance.
Also, when you know something's going to repeat, you know, if I know I'm going to keep hitting my head on this low doorway to the trash enclosure, then I might think about making that a reminder, like, okay, instead of just swearing.
At some point.
Or
you know, like
how about
fixing it, you know?
Well, instead of just falling down on my knees when I had, you know, I can make that a reminder.
Well, there's another thing that I think one has to watch out for, and I'm not saying that anybody in this group is doing it, but I've seen it in spiritual so-called circles where not in an EJ Gold group because I've never been in any EJ Gold groups. I mean, this is the first, you know, with you guys. But anyway, where they develop this attitude of, you know, you have to accept whatever comes your way, we have to be careful in tolerating the negative manifestations of others not to accept abuse. Okay? One has to be careful not to accept psychological abuse. Because some people really go too far with this acceptance thing, where they're actually accepting behavior that it's actually detrimental to the other person. So that's just a cautionary thing that we have to be careful with.
Err on the side of protecting yourself, not to the extent of being closed off to everybody, but you have something to protect now because we're growing a soul. This is what this is all about. We're growing a presence. That is, there's a permanency to it. And when we talk about Spinoza, for instance, in the fifth book of the Ethics, he says, that is eternal, only which is eternal. Only which we've created eternality about it. And that's what we're doing. This isn't something eternal that we're working with. One of the things that I also got out of this chapter, maybe we should continue, Herb.
Yes.
I think
we ended with Jesus. What was that?
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, we ended with Jesus, so why don't we go on? Who would like to read next?
I'll read a paragraph.
Go ahead.
Okay. The intentionally acquired habit of the invocation of presence does not just happen. Nothing in ordinary life produces the invocation of presence. And in fact, if anything, it produces just the opposite, nor will this invocational habit penetrate our being by osmosis, just by hearing about the idea.
Harry, give us the next paragraph, please.
Everyone here has the experience to know and understand this. Maybe you practice piano, dance, or sports. It doesn't matter what. You know that serious mastery requires many hours of practice without missing a single day.
Just from a practical point of view, why would this be any different? You know, mastery takes years of continual work. I mean, there's the old concept of Malcolm Gladwell plays with in his book called Outliers, where he says it's 10,000 hours of practice starts you into the area of mastery.
David, the answer is laziness. You know, Gurdjieff talks a lot about this. It's one of the most unbecoming manifestations of the three-brain being. Laziness.
Yeah.
Laziness. And that this is the whole idea that EJ is coming across here. Just thinking about it, it doesn't happen by osmosis. And, you can notice that. You can notice it in the people that you work with and see, you know, some people are actually doing something and some people just show up and listen and they don't really do any work on their own. Well, that's fine, but, you know, nothing's going to happen.
The other
fact,
thing that
they actually can wind up worse off.
Worse off. The other thing you'll notice, particularly for people who do work with others, like I do a lot of work with others in my consultation and tax practice and things like that. And like I have tomorrow morning at 9 a.m., I have a very intense tax consultation conference call. And the people owe a lot of money. So I'm the bearer of bad news, right? And somehow, because they can't think any differently, I'm the cause. Now, I've had a little practice with this, so I'm
able... I mean, if you were a better accountant, you could save them more money, is that it?
How could I possibly have paid this amount, owe this amount? I've never had. It just can't be. And so my posture, so I know I'm going into that, right? And I'm really looking forward to it. I'm really looking forward to it because I'm going to start with these practices of this invocation because I'm going to be there. Everything else... this part of Maya that's a dance in front of me, the phone call, my technical skill base that's going to come out, that's part of it too. And for me, the prize is going to be this sense of presence and getting paid. That's part of it too. And so that's also, in spite of all of that, having enough presence, because that's the practicality of why I'm there. So I'm going to practice. I have two or three tomorrow where I'm going to be able to practice these exercises. It's just great, you know. So it's just great. But how do you make it? It has to be pragmatic. We're beyond the theory, you guys. I left UCLA when I was a philosophy student because I wasn't interested in this. I wanted to know, how do you apply what Immanuel Kant is saying in the Critique of Pure Reason? What's the pragmatic mirror that is there? And I found it after many years with Ije. When I was on the phone with him, and he says, why don't you come out and be my accountant? And I thought, well, that would be interesting doing that here.
Mm-hmm.
And I was right. It was and has been thoroughly interesting. So if you work with other people in your job, you're fortunate. You're fortunate because you get to, that's like the most complex thing with another human, right?
Mm-hmm.
Fascinating. We're going to skip ahead a couple of paragraphs to the very bottom of page 11 on the right hand. It requires.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, do you want to read that, Ivan?
Okay. It requires no special activities or exterior conditions. The silent, discreet invocation of presence can be performed anywhere, under any conditions, even at a restaurant, a boiler factory, or even in prison, until it becomes second nature.
So there was another Zen monk was in New York, and he was one of the hot dogs. So he goes to the hot dog vendor, and he says to the guy, make me one with everything.
Mm-hmm.
So the hot dog vendor makes him this incredible hot dog, right? Gives him the hot dog, and he gives him a $20 bill to pay, right? And the vendor puts it in the drawer and just sits there, and the monk says, hey, where's my change? And the guy says, change comes from within. Oh, well.
That's a real New York.
It is. I don't know what I thought of that.
Well, it's just like, hark, a cannon.
Hark, a cannon. So, for me, I learned this terminology from a teacher I had many, many years ago called Richard Rose, and he says that it's the development of ways and means. What is the ways and means that works for you,
mm-hmm.
you know, in your particular thing? Do you teach tomorrow?
Yes, I do.
So you're going to go, and you're going to go teach in front of this whole class, right?
Right, yes.
And can you walk into that position starting with a sense of presence? Invocation presence is more important than talking about Joseph Conrad and the Heart of Darkness.
Yeah, it's a good, that's a challenging exercise.
It is, in that mode, isn't it?
To have that, yes, to have that process going on.
What are you going to do tomorrow, Harry?
I'm going to see two clients.
So you're going to see two clients, and you've seen clients for what now, 30 years?
Actually, 38.
38 years. So you pretty much know what it's going to be like, right?
Well, one of them is a new intake, and that's always the best thing because I don't really know what is going to happen. And
so
it's kind of like going, you know, it's like the Discovery Channel and Nat Geo walking in on two legs. It's, you never know what's going to happen.
You have no idea. But you can start your session with your invocation of presence.
Actually, I actually do that. I have a little ritual, a little prayer that I do that is designed to do just that.
What are you going to do tomorrow, Sean?
I sometimes do prayer, but that's, you know, when I remember to do it, it was really helpful.
What's your day like tomorrow?
Did you ask, did you say Sean, David?
I did. Yeah.
I'm sorry. Tomorrow I have a wonderful day. I have band practice tomorrow. My band is practicing tomorrow.
All right. So you're going to get there.
That's not a tough one. I'm usually showing up in a very good mood for that one.
That's great. And there's going to be three or five other guys, right?
There's three of us. Well, a bass, guitar, and drums. Just a three-piece. Yeah. And I also sing.
I love that. Oh, wow. Form, by the way, that's just the best. And
I have a technical question about this, though. See, the thing is,
go ahead, throw it out.
The, you know, when we go into an experience in Maya, which is not a negative one, it's a pleasant one. You know, and
And you know, playing in a band and having that that freedom of expression that musicians have, and that you guys do every week, DJ does a lot every morning. It's a pleasant circumstance. So you're not really doesn't feel like you have to pull anything out of that. You go into it and it's going to be a pleasant experience. However, this class really impacted me. Reading from this book with you guys tonight, the synergistic effect of and this. Is a technical question I have for the group. This is not just for you, David, but whoever wants to chime in. I've been practicing the exercise. I write down on what my experiences are. And then one day I was 99.9% in the Maya thing. I was identified with it. I was in a, you know, what I would call a bad mood. And I decided that I was going to try and invoke my presence there. Now, in the previous, all my previous other attempts, I was either able to look at the clock, which was an outward focus, and then pull back from that, or I wasn't in a particularly negative Maya experience, so that it was easier to pull back. But I made the intent to do that, but what I had problems with was the thing to pull back from, because I was so, I felt enmeshed in the moment. And actually, I want to invoke my presence tomorrow with the guys in the band. I mean, it can't hurt. It can only help my situation by being in a pleasant situation and not have to say, well, you know, it's going to be a great day tomorrow anyway. Anyway, that's my question. How did, technically, when you're locked in that Maya moment and you're trying to invoke your presence, it feels like there's nothing for me to bounce back off of, like there is with the clock attention. So I can focus on something outside of myself and then pull back, you know?
It's tricky. It's a tricky one. So the definition of Maya, so how do you pull back in this case? The definition of Maya doesn't say Maya is all the bad stuff.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay, good, okay.
It's good. Maya, the whole boat.
Yeah, well, if I understand Sean correctly, he's saying, how do I pull back, like draw the bowstring back, you know, away from the phenomenal if I'm happy-go-lucky having a wonderful time.
That's it, Ivan, yes.
Yeah.
That's exactly, yeah.
We're mad. We're really involved in it. One or the other.
It's interesting, but maybe it has to do with my character, but for some reason you reminded me of I learned something years ago. Boy, I can't even remember how many years ago it was, but this is sort of the opposite kind of situation. It's like, you know, I have a tendency, I have some allergies, you know, and it used to be worse, actually, some years ago. And, you know, I would get into migraine headaches and a really bad allergic reaction situation. And at one time it happened that I was dealing with not exactly a publishing deadline, but a writing deadline. It was something was on deadline, and it had to be produced. And it wasn't just me. I was collaborating with, actually, Brigitte. Some of you may know Brigitte Donvez. She was working with us on Talk of the Months and Gateways books and stuff like that. And we had a deadline. We were given an assignment, you know, to produce something, and the book was going to press or something like that. And I was in terrible, absolutely terrible, ridiculous, actually physical state. But, I actually put it aside somehow. It's like I cut through that because I realized afterwards that it was the motivation, you know, that I had a motivation, a necessity, we would say, maybe around here. You know, the work had to get done. The product had to be produced. And I actually did that collaboration with Brigitte, and I could actually show it to you what we published. But it was interesting because it's my usual outlook is that, boy, if I'm run down like that, I better take some aspirin, I better take a nap, better do anything, you know, and I'll do the work tomorrow. I'll do it another time. And but what I learned from that is that it's possible for me to power through the machine, to power through the symptoms that I'm having, as a matter of will, if I'm saying to myself, this is a necessity, this must happen, or I must go in this direction. And I don't know why the pleasant experience that you're describing made me think of that, but I'm thinking the same way, that if it's those things that I'm really attracted to that are very seductive or, you know, make me giddy and happy and excited and all that kind of thing. It's like I'm going to need to have a motivation. I'm going to need to be driven by something to pull back from that, to invoke presence, is what I'm thinking.
Okay, good, good.
Can I make a comment on this? Because this
yeah.
is very, very confusing to me. First of all, I don't know if EJ says it. I remember reading it somewhere. You can't be working on yourself 100% of the time. You'll become a psychopath. And Gurdjieff says at the same time. In other words, that we pick times, so like with David going into these meetings tomorrow, he's made a choice that he's going to work on himself during these interactions. Now, when you're playing your music and you're into the music and you're thoroughly enjoying it, okay?
Right, right.
Music and sound, you know, it vibrates through the body. I mean, why have the need to pull back from it? In other words, I would say fully experience it.
That is the usual course, physically.
In other words, make it be a three-centered experience, because
that's
what we're aiming for, but not to pull back from it. I would say take it in and take it in into all centers. So that's just a subjective opinion.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I also remember the warning about overdoing it, and that's why I'm glad I'm working with you guys. I really love you guys. I told you, I wrote down, my only work regret is that I didn't start this class back when I started this book. I started it by myself with the book, and I didn't have you guys at this particular time to work with, but it is really, really, I love having this group working with us. All the input is absolutely fabulous, guys and gals.
Yeah.
And it's good. Thank you, Ivan, and Judy and Dave. It's been very useful because I asked the question, I was thinking about the question, and it was already being answered as we started the chapter. So I had to stop and ask it to make sure that I was getting it right. And then I learned something about the my again, because I tended to think that it was, you know, my was always the negative. It's the wrapping up in it. There isn't a necessity for me to be present tomorrow. But there's no necessity for me not to be. You know, I can decide, listen, when I get there, I want to invoke my presence. If I get caught up, which is what we all do as musicians, if I get caught up in the vibrations, that's what we're there for. But, if I could at least start the day off that way, make myself present with the setup, you're getting ready to get the microphones ready and all that stuff, and be there, you know, just be there.
In other words, exercise focused attention on whatever you're doing. It's
just like you said, Judy,
that's a different kind of work. In other words, be there then, you know, in the moment, at the moment that you're setting up. You know, be there. I mean, that's kind of I think a very important thing. And, in fact, I noticed, I have a reading group on Tuesday night, And I just noticed that, you know, people cannot stay focused for more than a few minutes. So it becomes mechanical reading. You can't read Beelzebub's tales mechanically. So, you know, I'm working on how I'm going to deal with that now with the group. But, you know, it's a very, very subtle thing. And it's because we don't remind ourselves that we have to be attentive. It's not that we can't do it. It is not hard to pay attention when you're setting up equipment. You just have to pay attention.
Right, right. Mm-hmm.
I think you have to remember.
Can I add something to this?
You have to remember that.
I think it's fascinating.
Go ahead, Harry.
When I start a day, if I am enjoying myself, just like Sean was saying, if I'm enjoying myself, I just become absorbed in it and have a great time. But I have a little post-it that I have that I put from one page to the next until it gets soiled, and I put another one, and it says, what does Harry have on his agenda today? And so I refer to myself in third person, and that sort of does something in my brain. It puts me into an observer position, and that makes it possible for me to do other things, to maybe remember myself or maybe to activate presence and to be more fully awake in the moment of what's happening. it happens without my having to make an effort, really, if I just ask that question.
But that's a reminder for yourself.
I don't know if it would help for anyone else.
Yeah. A note to yourself, Harry, a reminder that you're making.
What is my agenda? What is my objective? What is my on my agenda here today with this individual or this task? Or what is not mine? What is Harry's? So it makes me look at myself differently.
Well, I think that's a great technique. And, you know, Krishnamurti never referred to himself. He always referred to himself in third person, and there are other masters that did that too. And it's very effective. And you know, I've done it also, Harry, but that's something I forget, so thanks for the reminder, because it does cause a separation where it's Judy, who's my mechanical personality, and then there's the other.
Well, yeah, what happens when I lose that little post-it? You know, I may not find it for 2 or 3 days, but you know, eventually I'll say, "Where's that post-it?" And then I'll make another one, and that seems to help.
Well, now we know what to buy you for Christmas.
The bright yellow one, please.
Post-it. I'd like to ask Sean a question.
Sure.
Yeah, Sean, I'm wondering, what is the effect? What happens if you invoke presence while you're playing music?
I don't know if I can answer that one. I'm one of these guys that practices every day. I'm very, very good at what I do. This is not an ego thing. I take it very seriously, and so I'm really good at it. It's always very smooth. It's very forming. I work at it. When I have parts that I got to work at. There's a magic that all musicians are drawn to, and I don't want to confuse. I don't want to conflate the two. But there's a magic that all musicians are. You know, when you guys are jamming, sometimes you wait for that moment where everything's just sparkling, and you know you're in that special spot. You know what I mean?
Yes.
But I can't say that I've ever actually tried to do that while I was playing. It almost feels to me as if that's the samadhi state that I'm in when I'm playing anyway. I'm not a learner. This is not a beginner for me. I really love every moment of the music as I'm playing it. I'm improvising all the time. I'm doing rehearsed parts, plus I'm improvising. My head brain is a little key track secretary while I'm so there's a lot of these creative big flows that are going on, and I can't say that I've ever practiced that exercise that I remember in many, many years, or if ever, that I was sitting down. You know, I used to practice scales 8 hours a day when I first started at 21. I mean, 8 hours a day I would practice scales. So I take the instrument very, very seriously. Why this chapter is a good reminder for me, because as I'm building this skill, rebuilding this old skill that was a very new form for me, it's the element of practice is I'm actually enjoying this class and invoking my presence. It's actually an enjoyable procedure. But I'm going to do it tomorrow. I'm going to post my results because I don't ever remember saying to myself, let me be present for this practice, and then let's see what the results are. I have no concerns about that it'll goop practice up somehow. Autopilot's too good for that. It's not going to happen. Yeah. Nothing's going to happen to the autopilot, you know?
Yeah, I don't feel like I have any idea whether this would be beneficial or not beneficial or one or the other. But what I'm thinking of, I mean, you know, I'm responding to, in a sense, what Judy was saying. Yeah, sure, I don't think that I try to prop my eyelids open. Like EJ says, you know, it's pathological to try to be awake at all, you know, to be awake for 24 hours or something like that. But I'm thinking of it as an experiment. You know, it's like to
absolutely.
Under circumstances, especially those things that I'm habituated to things I'm doing every day or things that I know I'm good at could be a very interesting experiment.
No, this is really good. I mean, I didn't even expect this coming because that's the thing now. I'll have data for that. I'll have an answer. Right now, I'm very positive that it's going to go well anyway. Like you said, you're already accustomed. You're already good at what you do. You're already having that experience. But I have data. Now I can set the intention. I can ease into practice and be present while I'm there. And when the setting up's going on, be present. If it at that point, there's going to be feedback. But then at the same time, you know, if I get lost in the music, well, you know, that's what happens. You get lost in the music. But
that's just a data point. You know, when I watch really good musicians jam, it's like they're passing a baton back and forth, right?
Amen, like brother. Yes, yes.
A really fine baton gets passed back and forth, and then it's like suspended in the air between them. I love it. I'm not a musician, but boy, I listen pretty darn good. Boy, I like to watch that. I love to watch that. And I say that as you become more facile at your invocation of presence, it's like you can take the jam that's presented to you anywhere in life.
Nice, yes.
You don't start out afraid because you know that you can find a place of serenity and starting point in your invocation of presence, and it's like jamming with the world. And you don't know what's going to be present to you when you walk through this door or that door or the market or the meeting or the conference call. But you're there. And that little riff that the guy sends you, you just observe it and watch it and you respond.
Yes.
So we're very interested to see how your practice goes tomorrow.
The input is, I'm so happy I was able to call tonight and be here live. I'm going to try and stay, be here. The outer world has some distractions upon me the last couple of times. I had to watch you guys tape. Very dynamic, participating live. Very dynamic, Dave.
Yeah, it is. It is, and I'm glad to hear you.
It feels like I'm jamming with a band, a bunch of guys that know their licks. That's what it feels like here.
That's right, brother.
You know what I mean? I'm trying to learn some new licks, and I'm jamming with a bunch of guys who really know their licks. That's what it feels like in this class with you guys.
That's how it is.
Hi, Jenny Gott says that yesterday my group hit a place of peace, presence, for the first time in 3 years as a group. It was an incredible energy. We all felt it.
Good. That, you know, she's the same thing. She's been working for 20 years with different forms of groups where that she provides a basis for them to study and work together. It's a great thing. So next week at 7 o'clock on Wednesday, we will move to Chapter 4. And I suggest that you read Chapter 4 and 5.
Okay.
Because let's just say it's kind of important to read them together, if you can, okay? And then see what we discover. And I'm particularly interested in the work that you do when you hear the cannon go off. And can you put yourself in a position where you know the cannon's going to go off anyway?
This is a really good chapter, very good chapter.
Bring your experiences back to the group, because the group will then have more of a nice gourmet meal to feed on.
Beautiful.
And I look forward to seeing everybody next week on Wednesday at 7 o'clock. Good night.
Thank you.
Good night.
Thank you all so much.